TNT News and Talk with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome, everyone, to the Dolores Cahill Show. It's great to have you here. If you want to follow me, you can check me, find me on ProfDoloresCahill.com and Custodian.com, C-U-S-T-O-D-E-A-N. So it's a great pleasure today to have my guest is Dr. Kat Lindley, all the way from Texas in America. And Kat, for those who don't know you, maybe you could just give a brief background to yourself. Welcome.
Thank you. So I'm a family physician in Texas. I was born in Croatia, now I live in the United States. I'm on the steering committee of World Council for Health and a few other organizations and trying to do the best in the crazy world we live in.
Excellent, Kat. So I think, first of all, I think we wanted to talk initially today about what's been going on in America and the FDA and the CDC in relation to children and these injections.
Yeah, so I believe it was last week. It feels like a long time ago, but I testified at the FDA hearing for babies 6 months and up because FDA wanted to approve the COVID vaccine. And as we all know, their studies really didn't show any data that it's needed in children. We know that kids have natural immunity and there are too many side effects. There is no benefit, only risk. So that was my testimony. And I have to say at the end of the day, they decided to approve it in children. And in my opinion, opinion of many others, it's a mistake because there are too many side effects like myocarditis, you know, seizures, autonomic disorders, and the risk to children is immense, no benefit and all risk. And we all know it's not medically needed or clinically indicated.
So why do you think they're doing it, or what, first of all, why do you think they're doing it, if you want to comment on that?
So if for those of you who read Robert Kennedy's book, he kind of lays out the argument that for these vaccines to be approved on children's schedule and goes on mandatory children's schedule, the companies would be indemnified for life. So even if the adults receive those vaccines later on, they would be indemnified. And we all know that EUA is not going to last forever. So they need something like this to make it better for themselves.
So you think the only reason that they're doing it for children, so do you think there will be a rollout in America then for children, or is it mainly to get it on the list in order to, I would say, unlawfully, and I don't think it's actually accurate, but why is that, do you think, the main reason, or do you think there's going to be a rollout to children in the United States?
There is already a rollout. Children are already getting the vaccine. There are a lot of photos and videos of children and parents lining up to get these vaccines. I do think it's going to probably become a part of our mandatory schedule right before the school starts, and parents are going to have to decide if that's what they want to do. I think the job of myself and physicians like myself is to explain why this is all risk and no benefit in child. In their own study, Pfizer excluded children that had COVID. And according to CDC, by February of this year, 74.2% of kids had COVID. The reason they probably excluded them is because if you vaccinate someone who had COVID, you risk a hyperimmune response that's going to create even more side effects. And, you know, I'm sure they didn't want these side effects to show up on their data that they were presenting. And it's really kind of mind-boggling for these scientists to not even look at the data and see that the risk in children is so immense. And I'm not even sure what is their plan to boost child every 6 months for these vaccines. What are they going to obtain? We do know that, I know you follow these things, but immune system is under attack, more boosters you have. And we have no long-term safety data. We know that there was a huge article, the sperm count decreases in males after boosters. There is another article that shows that lipid nanoparticles accumulate in the ovaries of girls at high levels. So we have no long-term safety data or no long-term fertility data. And I know, you know, I have lots of kids and one of them is a little girl. You know, the idea that you would risk child's ability to become a parent later on in life, it's very distressing. And I think parents really need to do their research.
And then I suppose, you know, if we're looking at the FDA and the CDC and the whole system of taking care of children with the doctors and with the police, if there is more harm than good for these children and babies, can you maybe update us on what is happening in America to stop this?
What are we trying to do is really just educate and push back on this. People are calling their legislators. Some legislators have been getting involved and are trying to write bills to stop these things. But for now, it's an uphill battle. And next week, we have another hearing. It's called Future Framework. For those of you who don't know, it's FDA would like to, from this point on, approve any vaccine, any COVID-related vaccine, so for future strains without having to go to trials. So it's kind of like the flu shots, you know, rolling flu shots every year. It's a little bit of the same idea. And this future framework, they would never have to do any kind of trials. And I was listening to Toby Rogers, and one of the things he said, the future framework is FDA giving up on science, because FDA would not have to show any data to roll this out. And there are too many side effects, too many risks. And I'm not sure who thinks this is a good idea, but it's definitely going to put the science back a lot more than it has so far.
So I suppose this is kind of a horror scenario, really, right? If we have injections that will harm these young people, children, babies in the next weeks and months, but also maybe for the rest of their lives. And then if there is coercion to say that they must get these injections in order to go to school, does it mean that in the last 2 years in America, they haven't really succeeded in stopping what's going on at all?
I agree. And if you look at the data, people are not getting boosters at the rate they want them to get. As a doctor, for me, it's hard. I would say, you know, you're completely right. We're not getting boosters. We're not getting vaccinated. But then I see the pictures of these babies getting the shot. And to me, even one of those babies getting a shot is one too many. So I think that we're failing because there are still some that are doing it. But overall, I would say that the intake of vaccines in states and all over the world is lower than they would like it to be.
Yeah, now I know the data from Northern Ireland, and there's been some great work done, including by, you know, teams of people informing everybody that they cannot actually administer poisons to people, right? That is the first principle of the law and of medicine, do no harm. But it looks like that more than 98% of children in the north of Ireland are not injected, even though there's been a huge element of coercion and advertising campaigns and media stories about the dangers. And of course, many parents, you know, that means 98% of the parents who may be in their 30s and 40s. And of course, then they're looking at other injections on the vaccine schedule. But I think what is very interesting is that for the last 2 years, you know, many people have been trying to stop this, but actually in America, it's not been stopped.
It hasn't. It kind of goes to the state. It depends which state you live in. Some states, they're a little bit more eager to get them because there's not as many vocal, maybe, physicians to lead the charge. The state I live in, the uptake is pretty low. Florida is kind of the same way. So, we're all doing the best we can, but that's the great news about Northern Ireland. And kudos to those physicians and leaders who are actually doing their job.
Yeah, because I think even for the 1 or 2%, though, for those children, we now know if it's anyway, exactly like you say, like the adults, that they may be predisposed to be chronically ill or to have heart attacks in, you know, for the rest of their lives. So I think maybe in this, you know, the next 6 months in 2022, it probably is an opportunity or a requirement for all of us around the world to take a look about how do we, I would essentially say that this is like injecting poison, right? Because if the babies and children we know never needed these injections, and if there are adverse events for even if it's one in 10 of those children, then it essentially is a medical procedure being condoned in a way by the medical councils around the world that is harming people, which is unlawful, that we really need to, I suppose, have a fundamental look at the structures of the regulators all over the world, but particularly in America.
I agree, because even if you just listen to that hearing last week, FDA, I feel like no one has listened to testimonies except for the ones that were like, oh, very eager to vaccinate a child. But even their own people who are presenting FDA data, there was a child, I believe 18 months, had a seizure after the first vaccine, and then they gave the child another vaccine. You know, it really kind of boggles my mind, because if I give someone amoxicillin and they have a rash, I stop the medication and change the antibiotic to something else. I don't just keep on going to see how far this rash is going to develop. So it seems like we have lost all scientific common sense and definitely just regular common sense. But to risk something in a child, it's very distressing. And for example, until a kid is a 6 month old, we don't give them Motrin, because Motrin is NSAID and it can affect their liver. So we're very careful not to give them Motrin just for regular fever. We only give Tylenol. But we are so cavalier about giving this injection to children without knowing what the long-term data is going to show.
So, and maybe we should move to some of the initiatives that you're involved with as well in the World Council for Health, because I know there are a number of initiatives that you and as many of us have been working together around the world. But is there a particular campaign that you'd like to highlight in the World Council for Health?
So just to give you an idea, kind of a little bit back towards the vaccine, we did this pharmacovigilance report recently. And this pharmacovigilance report shows that across different databases, VG Access, Eurovigilance, UK Yellow Card, NR, VAERS, the incidence of these adverse effects is huge, in millions, and over 40,000 deaths. So we do call for the vaccines to be stopped around the world. I know no one is listening, but I would like at least people to look at this report and realize that there are too many side effects, too many people are suffering. And we did air that movie that James Wells made about vaccine injured, the letter to my MP, and that was a very powerful story of regular people who did what they were told, and then they paid the subsequences, and now they're waiting for help. One of the good news, I saw that there was one, and I think now second British citizen who was awarded some money for the judgment because of what happened with the vaccine. I think £120,000.
£120,000, yeah.
Yeah, which is not great money, but at least it's helping a little, and they're acknowledging it, which is very, very important. Other things that we always are fighting is WHO takeover of the world, as I like to say. It's kind of interesting what WHO is doing, trying to do with the monkeypox. I think they were meeting on the 23rd, 2 days ago, to decide if it's going to be a pandemic, which is ridiculous. I think even the cases are less than 100, but you know, I don't even follow anymore that part, because we need to push back. It's such a nonsense for our organization of non-elected officials to rule the world. So, you know, there are many programs. One of the biggest ones we're trying to push is more awareness on vaccine injury and giving people a voice. I think that's very important. And in the weeks to come, we're going to have several GA meetings highlighting some of these adverse events so that people can stay informed.
Yes, exactly. And I think one of the things, I suppose, is that what we have to see is that what people don't, I think people don't want to be compensated for adverse events, right? Because what they want to do is to not have the adverse events and not be coerced into taking an injection to lead their lives, like to go to university or to go to school or to take a flight to see their family members or to carry on their business, right? So I think in a way, you know, they had these funding mechanisms set up before they even pulled out with the clinical trials, knowing that there would be adverse events because there were ingredients in these injections that would harm people. And almost now they're turning, you know, the relationship with the medical community into a financial transaction based on harm for something. And maybe if you want to just cut in a few minutes for people who are listening, just if they are new listeners that aren't aware that there is prevention and treatment and that there are things like what you do in your practice, which is very much in sync with people's health and keeping them healthy, that if they are worried about future, let's say, influenza-like illnesses, what can they do for themselves?
I think the most important thing is to fall back to what we used to do, which is really just lead a healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, non-processed foods, try to get some sleep, decrease your stress, exercise, all of those things that we don't want to do, right? It's a lot easier to go have a pizza and a beer than actually make a healthy meal and take care of yourself. Those are basic things we can do. And then obviously nutraceuticals play an important role, which is vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, quercetin, N-acetylcysteine. Those are all the things that will actually boost your immune system. And for those of who are vaccine injured, their immune system is actually not working at its optimal level. So what you need to do is actually fall back to that healthy diet, try to get some rest, try to really take care of your body, and then take these nutraceuticals, because the studies do show that high levels of vitamin D are needed to combat some of these things. And then, like I said, quercetin, black seed oil, Nigella sativa is extremely important. And for those who are truly injured and are having side effects, there are several protocols. FLCCC has one. Dr. McCullough has his own. But we do have medications that help. And if you live outside of the United States, you're welcome to send me an email. My website is katlindleydo.com. I do respond to all my emails, and I'll be happy to give some advice on how to do things. But the best thing you can do now is take care of yourself, reclaim your life, and do those things that sometimes we don't have time for, but are very much needed to get back to health.
Oh, I think that's a wonderful message. And if you want to just kind of give your email as well, just for everyone who's listening, for your, so that they can find out a little bit about the your medical center, your website.
Yeah, it's Kat Lindley, so www.katlindleydo.com. And I do have World Council for Health email. I'll find it before we leave and put it in chat. But
that's great.
If you go through my website, there is a way to actually click on it and send me the email. And I get these messages from all over the world, and they're heartbreaking, because a lot of, you know, I always say a physician community has, medical community in general, has actually abandoned our own oath and our own duty by not acknowledging what's happening. And I have, like I said, a lot of people, a lot of friends from UK, and when they go to the doctor, they don't even, the first thing they'll say, you have anxiety, you have depression. They don't acknowledge what's going on.
And I suppose maybe, I think it had to maybe get this bad, because we know this has kind of been incrementally being implemented through protocols, through the health system, trying to put, give doctors less time to interact with patients, and also making it difficult, as we know, for them to recommend things like lifestyle changes or vitamin D or vitamin C, which can be very, very helpful. And often they're just pushing some of the pharmaceutical products without actually taking the time. And they don't have the time to listen to their patients or to actually, you know, talk through lifestyle changes or ways that would keep them really healthy without pushing drugs on them. And I think somehow, I think in the next year or so, we need to really develop a mechanism to help the doctors walk out of the way that they have been pushed into for the last 10 or 20 years. it's almost like a retraining or whatever, which is something that we, first of all, I think need to acknowledge and discuss the pressures the doctors are under themselves, you know, and we do know that many brave doctors who've been speaking out have been struck off by their medical councils for actually not recommending enrolling on a clinical trial, you know, or trying to prescribe life-saving treatments like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. But maybe we'll just, if that's okay, my guest today is Dr. Kat Lindley, and we'll go for a break on the Dolores Cahill Show, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
George Eliason on TNT Radio.
Today we have a special guest. This is a photojournalist from the UK. His name is Dean O'Brien, and Dean has had some very unique experiences, makes him one of the most important journalists and photojournalists in the war in Donbass over the last 8 years. What were people telling you over there, Kramatorsk, Slavyansk?
Well, they were telling me kind of how they obviously can't practice their language. They have to be very careful what they say. When I was in Slavyansk, I was approached by somebody and they said, oh, would you come and do a talk to our children at the school about you being a photographer? And I was like, yeah, sure. And when I went and done the talk with the children, some of them kind of spoke to me afterwards and said, you really need to go to the other side and see what the Ukrainians are doing to my grandmother's home. And they were referring to like the Donbass.
George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
The strength of our country hasn't just been won on the battlefield. It's won every day in our communities when we come together in our toughest times. For over 100 years, the American Legion has been strengthening communities across our nation by providing life-saving help and support to our veterans and neighbors during times like we're facing today. We are the American Legion, veterans strengthening America. To learn how you can help, visit legion.org.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Dolores Cahill Show on tntradio.live. And my guests today are Dr. Kat Lindley. But now we're joined all the way from England by Mohammed Butt. And Mohammed, for those few people who don't know about you, would you welcome and would you give a brief introduction for yourself?
Hello, Dolores and Dr. Kat. Hope everybody's well. I'm the CEO of Brand New Tube, which is a video sharing platform. A lot of people already know about it, but we're based around allowing people to speak their truth, and in particular, doctors, scientists, to come forward and give us the other side of what's going on in the world.
Yes, and Mohammed, I just want to acknowledge, you know, I am censored, as a lot of us are, from many of the big globalist platforms. And I think if I didn't have Brand New Tube and my channel there, I wouldn't be able to put up any videos or get my message out. So I'm exceedingly grateful. And I know, Mohammed, you contacted me at the very beginning in 2020, 2021. So I am very grateful for all of the support that you've given to me, Mohammed.
Well, there's no need to mention that and embarrass me on your radio station, Dolores. Everybody's doing a lot of work. I did want to ask one quick question. Can I ask that, Dolores?
Firstly, Dolores,
can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what, how long you've been a professor, what you're doing, deal with? There's a purpose why I'm asking this.
Yes, so I suppose I've been doing what I'm doing, my PhD. I finished it in 1993, so 89 to 93, I was training in my PhD. Then I went to Munich for 2 years, Max Planck for 8 years, and led a group there. And then I came back and had multiple roles at the same time between 2002 to 2004-05. But in 2003, I was then made a professor in Dublin. And then since 2005, I was a full professor in the School of Medicine in University College Dublin, and I retired in September of 2021. So I've been a full professor for maybe 17 years.
And you missed out inventing some technology for testing.
That's right.
Dolores, don't be shy. So can we know
that? No, I think a lot of the listeners might have sadly had to listen to my,
They've got to listen to it again, Dolores.
But I suppose the thing is that when I was doing my research and my PhD back in 1989, 1990, instead of just buying the antibodies and using them, I thought I would check the four or five antibodies, because when I bought them, they were given different results. And I was, so it would be like if you're buying a product and it says it does something, that you would just check that fundamentally from first principles. And then I found that the antibodies, so it's like the tools which are used in diagnostic testing or in pathology labs or for the diagnosis of things like cancer, that were they actually specific? And it turned out they weren't. And then when I was raising that and studying it, there wasn't much, everybody was just kind of ignoring it. So then I decided in 1993 to then develop this high content protein array technology and to develop my career to first of all, look and see if the diagnostic tools were accurate, because they were diagnosing cancer in pathology labs and all the testing. And if they weren't, to which I ended up doing, develop these as part of the Resource Center of the Human Genome Project, that all my life I've been advocating research integrity, and that anyone who does anything has to put the tool in the public domain. So that could be if it was a virus, if it existed, if it was a computer model saying there's a pandemic, if there's an antibody to diagnose COVID-19, that it would have to be publicly available. Everybody else could check everybody else's, what they were saying, their publications, and that promotion in science would and accolades would only be based on how truthful you were. But also I was on the Government Advisory Science Council for 10 years, and from 2004, and from 2004, 5, 6, I was trying to set up an office of research integrity, so that anything that doctors and scientists would do and the industry could be challenged, and that the granting, 20% of the funding that would go to science and medicine would be based on testing the accuracy and research integrity of publications. And if they weren't accurate, that would be a criminal offense for fraud and misrepresentation. And that's why for 30 years or so, I've been studying the area around research integrity and fraud and the law.
So that's like one page in a book of 300 pages, something you're involved in, Professor Dolores. Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, who's coming on, he's slaughtered on Wikipedia and Google, but if you go to his website, www.vernoncoleman.com, you'll find the reality of what Dr. Vernon Coleman is and what he's been doing. Dr. Kat Lidley has put herself out there and I've seen the interview she's been doing. It almost breaks your heart when you listen to her talking about the vaccines, the jabs, the children. So just three examples. I've been in soft furnishings for 30 years. Blinds, curtains, carpets, floorings, kitchens, partners here and there, tech 2 years, a platform. Me saying these things, people could come out and say, oh, who's this crazy guy? What's he talking about? Conspiracy. You, Dr. Kat, Dr. Vernon Coleman, three people, there's tens of thousands of doctors. What type of brain cells do people have who sit there with a straight face and try to say, you're all talking nonsense? It's all conspiracy theories, and the reality is just listen to us and take the jabs, take the medication we're giving you, do what we say, and everything will be fine. To me, in a nutshell, your listeners, I would ask them, how does that even make sense?
It doesn't make sense, right?
Because no, Dr.
you would think
Kat.
That it doesn't make sense. You would think if they only knew how much. It took a while to get to this point where you're just gonna, it's not tell the truth, but put yourself out there, right? Because I don't want to be in this place. I'm a normal person. I'm a mom of five. I happen to be a physician, but I'm happy to stay behind the scenes. I'm not the one that wants this limelight or people intruding in my life and having opinions of what I do. So it wasn't a decision easily made, but we're out there. And there's lots of us out there just telling the truth. That saying truth is like a lion, let it loose, you don't have to defend it, it will defend itself. It's true. because we're telling the truth. And how much louder do I need to shout for them to realize that giving children these vaccines is just going to harm them? There's no benefit, none. So if I'm telling you that I, mom of five, a physician, will not vaccinate my child, how much louder do I need to be?
Yeah, I mean, people listening, they would understand that first, that we're a group of opinions, and there's evidence base as well, which we looked at, and my opinion is there's a lot of deception out there. But that vast deception that, in my opinion, exists out there, and many other people's opinions, it has to be defeated, Kat and Dolores. It has to be defeated. And the reason why is this, in my opinion, is if I ask a serious question, it's not an easy one, right? Okay, but it's just one of them things. If you look at all the doctors and the nurses that have come forward, for example, it's not an easy thing to absorb, but let's just look at it a minute. Would they have come forward? A lot of them, some would definitely have, in my opinion, but would it have been the way it had they not gone for mandatory vaccines for all the healthcare staff, the doctors, the professors? Because to me, sometimes that's the reality when it hits home that, hold on a minute, they're telling us to take this experimental vaccine, in my opinion, which is an experimental vaccine, and evidence provided shows that. Would they have just carried on jabbing us? Now, I'm not expecting anybody to say, yeah, 100% they would, based on evidence. It's an opinion I'm asking. My opinion is that a lot wouldn't have come forward. I'm happy they have now, and I'm happy it's a reality check for everybody that don't sit on the fence thinking it's not going to come to you. It is going to come to your doorstep. Just happens to be a mistake, in my opinion, they've made when they went for that mandatory for the healthcare people and that, because had they not, I think most have just carried on jabbing away and taking the wages and paying the mortgages and the car bills because that's human nature for most of them. That's what I see, just like at the time of Hitler and what happened to the Jews and how things, they sat back and watched that happen. And people, how did people just sit back and allow that to happen? There's a system. It's been sort of built into us for decades and decades and decades. And what you've found here in 2020 in particular, something that's never been experienced in anybody's lifetime at the moment, and that is mass deception by a small group of people where they expected the majority to stay silent, and thank God, people started to come forward, like Dolores and yourself, and Vernon's been doing it for years, and people have done it for 20, 30, 40 years, exposing certain things. But for 2020 to arrive the way it did, and this group of people come out on the scale they did, there's many questions needed, but they can't win, Dolores. They can't win, in my opinion. They never win. They're going to be defeated. But that small point, Kat, is would they have come forward, Dolores? In your opinion, would the amount that are coming forward now, had they not gone for mandatory, would they have come forward? And would we have been in a sit-down 100 times worse than the time of what Hitler did to the Jews?
So your question is that, in a way, if it didn't, mandatory means that the nurses and the doctors had to have it themselves. And in a way, I think Ireland is similar to what happened in a lot of countries, is there were not that many nurses and doctors coming forward, you know, until it was a few months, maybe 6 months later, when the nurses, you know, were saying that in order for you to keep your job in the middle of 2021, and the doctors, that they had to have it themselves, whereas for the first 6 months they were injecting patients, even though they knew that there was an issue. So I think you're right. I mean, there are many brave people that were speaking out from the very beginning, you know, from 2020. But you are right. It wouldn't be, in my opinion, the tsunami of professionals coming out if they didn't find themselves in the situation, like pilots and dentists and nurses and doctors, that they then, you know, if they wanted to keep their job, they had to get the injection. So I think you're right. But Kat, what do you think?
I agree as well. You know, for me, I grew up in communism, and I love how people say, I was awake from the moment it happened. I knew it right away. That's a load of BS, as I like to say. No one really knew right away. I think maybe people kind of had some inclination. for someone like me, I truly, I did realize it early on because I was having anxiety at night when this was happening. And I couldn't figure out why I was having these panic attacks and anxiety. And I was talking to a friend of mine who knows me very well. And she goes to me, "Kat, you're having PTSD, you're remembering." And I'm like, "You're right, I am remembering." And the reason why is because what happens in communism and totalitarian and fascism, they're all the same. What they do is they make you fear something, then they isolate you, and they make you fear it a little bit more, and then they start giving you little things back while they're taking some bigger things away. And they did that with, you know, 6 feet apart, wear a mask, and then ultimately vaccine. So even when the whole thing started, I said from the beginning, it's not about this vaccine, it's about the mandate. Because if a country, if a government, if a job mandates someone to do something so they can keep their job and provide for their family, you lost your freedom. And that's what totalitarianism is. You lose your freedom and you never get it back. They've taken lots of our rights away. And I know you guys have this human right in UK that's they're still kind of trying to figure it out. But I keep on telling people in UK, that's really a huge, huge thing. Everyone is like, "Oh, Together Declaration, sign this petition, sign that petition." And I think they do a great job. They do an awesome job. But they need to do a better job, because this human right thing needs to be taken off the freaking table. Because what it's trying to say is, if you, from now on, we're going to take your individual rights and we're going to start making decisions for everyone else in the interest of everyone else. So as soon as that thing is signed, revised or whatever, they're going to make, these mandates are going to come back, because they're going to say, "Well, you all have to get the vaccine for the better of everyone else." And all the countries have done that. We have our own versions of these bills that everyone is trying to pass kind of under the cover of darkness, because that's what they're doing. They're taking our rights away, and the ones that they've taken away so far, we're not getting them back. So it's a tragedy. But you're right, the reason other people are waking up is because of those mandates.
Yeah, and maybe I think, so, you know, this was all written in books and things even 50 years ago, 40 years ago. So one of the reasons why I decided to go into the area of testing, and also we were, you know, one of the most recognized labs in the world for deciding on the accuracy of testing in my academic lab and in the companies, is that really it's not the agenda that's going on. It's not really the vaccine, which is a tool. It's the testing in order to say if you can work, if you can leave your home, if you can go to college. So it's actually the agenda of removing our freedom is through the testing. And that's why we need to, you know, so part of, you know, all of the things that I'm trying to do is to solve it. And this is kind of like a Jenga tower. And if you recognize the pillars that are the most important for them to coerce and be tyrannical and intimidate people, the two things I would say is the testing and the law, you know, to hold individual regulators or prime ministers to account. And then to say, okay, if you have a test around SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, can we just check it? And can we fundamentally check what's in the vials? Because if there's any element that they are not accurate, then fraud unravels all under the law. And this whole thing will stop and fall apart. But the individual, there's like 20 people in each nation that then hold the liability for not unraveling the fraud. And they do involve key people like the regulators, the Minister for Health, the Prime Minister, some of the senior judges and police in the nation. And so it's quite easy, then each nation can focus on these people and then just say, well, is the testing accurate? And are you upholding the law by coercing, we'll say, babies and children into getting something that will only cause them harm?
I think if you look at the situation regarding the general public, so Kat, for example, people watch news, don't they? They watch news now, Question Time, things like this. Just imagine it. And you sat there, you can't really speak watching. You're looking at the screen, you can't speak. There's an audience there. In my opinion, it's very, very sort of like organised and sort of set a certain way. How many times do we find ourselves looking at the screen, screaming literally like, this is madness? It's like somebody at the screen saying, the sun's out, and really it's pouring, it's raining, there's no sun out. But they keep saying it to you. And they keep telling you every day, 24 hours, 7 days a week. Everybody's repeating. It's on the front page of the newspapers. But we're looking at it saying, but there is no sun out. There's no sun out, but there's no voice being heard. So when platforms are established, social media is established, that's there to tell the reality of what's going on in life, then the message can be got across firmly. But I'm a firm believer of the idea of society will have leaders based on society itself. Unless society wakes up and expects truth, honest, integrity, looks out for each other, respects each other, do the things that we normally understand of right or wrong, then we'll be given leaders, we'll end up with leaders that are extreme the way a lot of these are. But many, many people, at the end of the day, amongst these leaders, amongst these people that are in authority, there's many people that can see what's going on and are waiting patiently for the right moment, someone to argue to have these removed or have people push back enough so that there's no choice but to remove them. But here's another one of them questions that I'd like to ask. And it's not an easy one, and it's something that sometimes people may shy away from, but how real is the idea that majority of people speaking and saying the things that we find almost impossible to comprehend are sort of compromised? How many of them are compromised? Compromised in the sense of, 2.5 years ago, something huge came out into the global world of the reality of certain things, how certain decisions are made in life by certain people. For example, Epstein, and how he had a grip, and what sort of compromise, how people are compromised. There's an argument that many people that we see on the screen saying the most ludicrous stuff, the most obvious stuff, are actually compromised and have no choice but to say it. And there's obviously those that are making the rules and deciding these things. So Kat and Dolores, you guys are speaking out, but how important, Kat, is it for people around the world? And I speak to many business people, many people in powerful positions who've got wealth and connections and network. How important is it for them to realize today isn't the day to worry about your mortgage and your car payments and keeping your job? How important is it for them to realize that if you speak out and you speak out together, it ends? You can't compromise it. If there's a dozen people in a room, you can compromise one or two, take them to one side and compromise them. If them dozen people are completely stuck together and understand the philosophy behind it and say, no, we must not budge, what can happen?
I think you're 100% right. You know, I keep on telling people, this is the hill. This is the hill and this is the time. You know, there is a saying, perhaps you've been born for a time just like this, and this is the time. There's no more waiting. I'm not sure what these people who keep on saying, well, I hear you, I'm on your side, and I, you know, and they have these arguments, but I'm like, well, start putting your money where your mouth is, or whatever that saying is. I'm terrible with American sayings. I always say them the wrong way, but that's what it is. They need to, you know, there's lots of people who actually have finances to actually come into this battle and help. Because so that's the biggest, actually, in my opinion, the hardest thing on our side. The ones who are in it, the reason we cannot be heard is because there's no platforms to be heard. I know that, you know, brand new YouTube is the platform, but we need as many platforms as that. What are they saving that money for? And what are the, you know, there won't be any future. You know, give us a couple of years. The way we're going, there's no future unless we all say no. And one of the reasons United States, actually, in my opinion, is hasn't. We live in different states, and every state is under different pressure. So we are not unified in our no. But if everyone says no at exactly the same time, this thing will end. But we need everyone to say it now. There's no more waiting. They're going after the babies who are 6 months old. Yeah. Moderna is starting a trial in 3-month-old babies. There is no more time to wait. Get off the freaking sideline and start making your voice being heard, because this will end when we say it ends. And we haven't said it yet.
I think regarding platforms, Brand New Tube is one of them. There's many other platforms, but see, this is the other thing. People are discussing them and they've argued about it and they've said, and it's annoying because you're still stuck on the wheel when you think like this. This is my opinion. That is competition. When are people going to wake up to competition? That it's part of the trap. There is no platform that needs to be at the top, ahead, with all the big stars. What needs to happen is there needs to be hundreds of platforms. And there are many people with podcasts and platforms and websites. There needs to be hundreds, not one that can be taken out and you're all stuck. No, you need to unite together, create a situation, which is happening from my understanding that it's happening, and that will become clearer soon, where there are people coming out with the financial muscle to create all these things on a mass scale. And they are waking up to have the type of Facebook, Twitters, and Instagrams, and the YouTube type platforms. They're waking up, but we can't fall into the trap of numbers. And we need to be able, no, everybody needs to support everybody else. Everybody should encourage people to subscribe to platforms and pay the £2 and £5 and £10 a month. Why? As long as the intention and it's clear and transparency is there, why they're there, what they're there to achieve, and they're there to open the door up to flood the world with knowledge of what's really going on out there. And that will happen. And is happening.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the most powerful solutions, I think. And your website is www.brandnewtube.com. And I think that is really, so you're right, because what we need is that if there are 10 or 20 free speech platforms like tntradio.live, brandnewtube.com, there's BitChute, there's a whole load, that if people actually, they can stay on Facebook and all the other ones and use them strategically, but they should actually switch their views and their money and their support to build the world that we need to. And I think a lot of people are not aware about how significant the business component is. But we'll carry on with this discussion in the next hour. So on the Dolores Cahill Show on TNT Radio.live, we'll go to the news at the top of the hour.